That's standuptocancer.org/AA.
Liberal politician Kamala Harris wants to take your guns. She says it herself.
We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program.
Mandatory buybacks? That's Washington speak for taking away your guns. More from Kamala.
Just because you legally possess a gun in your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible.
Take Kamala at her word. Democrats will ban guns and take them from your home. And here in Wisconsin, congressional candidate Rebecca Cook is following in Kamala's footsteps. Rebecca Cook called for a ban on the most commonly owned rifle in the U.S. She even earned an F from the NRA. As a political operative, Cook spent the last decade working for defund the police Democrats. She'd defund police and take your guns. It's radical and it's dangerous. Liberal Rebecca Cook. She won't protect you. She won't let you protect your family.
I'm Derek Van Orden, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message. Paid for by Van Orden for Congress.
You're listening to WRDN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM, Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Presidential candidates and running mates focusing on battleground states with Election Day 1 week out. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz in Georgia disputed the Trump campaign's message that Americans are worse off than 4 years ago. Walz says Trump failed America during the pandemic and added trillions to the national debt.
4 years ago, when he tells you, oh, were things better 4 years ago? Yeah, if you were a billionaire because you got a tax cut, the rest of us got screwed during the deal. That's what happened.
GOP Senator and VP candidate J.D. Vance in Michigan pledging mass deportations and talking immigration.
The only way we're going to get our country back is if we do what Donald J. Trump has promised, use the United States military against those Mexican drug cartels and make America safe for American citizens again.
Word today that actress Terry Garr has died, known for her comedic roles in Tootsie and Old God and Young Frankenstein. Terry Garr was 79. This is ABC News. The country's top counterintelligence official warning foreign actors are targeting tech companies.
Mike Casey, the chief counterintelligence officer for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, says there's been a large uptick in spies looking to get information out of American tech companies. He says China in particular is looking to steal technology that would hinder competition and bolster China's military. They do this, he says, by setting up proxy companies that look real and can fool tech employees into divulging secretive information. Mike DeBusky, ABC News.
The U.S. warning was one of five released this week from American allies aimed at encouraging tech companies to choose, quote, security from the start. The L.A. Dodgers are now one win away from a World Series title. They beat the Yankees last night, taking a 3-0 lead. Tonight's game in New York City in just a few hours. No team has ever come back from a 3 games down to win a World Series. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Everyone on the road is trying to make it to their destination safely. You can help by staying aware of the large trucks and buses around you. They take longer to stop, have large blind spots, and make wide turns that require caution from other drivers. It takes all of us working together to share the road safely. Learn more at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov. Paid for by FMCSA.
Pluto TV is a place for movie fans like me.
And TV fans. Like me.
They've got something for everyone, and it's free.
I love free, and I love Jersey Shore.
For me, it's The Godfather.
SpongeBob SquarePants, I am Patrick. Patrick is me.
Oh, Forrest Gump, come on.
Criminal Minds, solving crime after bedtime.
Whatever you love to watch, Pluto TV makes it easy with thousands of free movies and shows.
Pluto TV, stream now, pay never.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Aylin. There's been a nearly 40% increase in early in-person absentee voting over 2020 in Wisconsin. Wood County Clerk and Wisconsin County Clerks Association President Trent Miner says all those absentee ballots mean we likely won't know the outcome of the presidential election in the state until the morning after Election Day.
Because it's just going to take them that long to push that many ballots through the machines to get the tabulation out.
Clerks Association supported a bipartisan bill to allow the processing of early ballots to begin on Monday. It passed the state assembly but failed to advance in the Senate. Voters in some Wisconsin school districts are facing big funding requests on their ballots.
Department of Public Instruction data indicates at least 121 districts putting referendum questions before voters, including some with more than one on the same ballot. That's the case in Madison Metropolitan Schools, requesting $100 million over 4 years for operations, and a second referendum requesting facilities bonds totaling $507 million over 23 years. There's more than a dozen Milwaukee area districts with referendums, and in the Green Bay area public schools, voters are being asked to approve a $183 million capital referendum to address school safety and renovations. Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
If you need assistance with energy or heating bills, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission encourages you to act now before the disconnection moratorium kicks in. Bureau of Consumer Affairs Director Brad Rose says customers should contact their utility provider to make a payment or arrange a payment plan.
The winter moratorium runs from November 1st till April 15th. And so during this time, a utility service that affects the main heat source cannot be disconnected for non-payment.
More information is available on the Public Service Commission website. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Summer is here today. High temperatures will attempt to shatter records as we soar to 80 degrees. Winds will be whipping out of the southwest, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, keeping us warm overnight, too. More records are on the line by tomorrow morning as lows only fall to the mid-60s. For fall and winter getaways plus holiday fun, check out Alexandria, Minnesota. ExploreAlex.com. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
Mixed trade in commodities today. Even the energy markets were mixed. Wheat futures posted solid gains. Soybean futures traded lower. That left corn stuck in the middle with modest gains. Cattle complex was under hefty pressure while lean hogs found enough buying to score another new contract high.
Live, the way I see it, the crock pot is more than half full. Via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Sean Hackett from Hackett Financial Advisors. Directly following the news, Brian Split from AgMarket.net, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Well, the question is, if you're going to take the time and make the effort to put the crock pot and plug it in, you might as well fill it.
Well, and if at that point you still view the crock pot as half empty, even if it is half full, you may be a pessimist.
That is so true. Not only that, but it leaves room for good stuff like onions and potatoes and carrots.
Sure.
You know, you throw all that stuff in there on top. Why not?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Pork is stronger with its friends in tow. I can tell you that.
Welcome to AgriTalk. I am Chip. That is Davis. And no, this is not cooking with guys. This is this is AgriTalk. Glad that you're with us. Yeah. So the wheat market made a really impressive move to the upside today. The corn market got pulled to the upside by what was happening in wheat, but corn was kind of anchored by the losses that we saw in soybeans, in the soybean meal market in particular. It's been under some heavy pressure in here. We're gonna start off by getting some perspective on the setback that we saw in the cattle market from Brian Split here in just a couple of moments. And then we're going to get into a conversation with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. We're going to talk about market trends, weather trends, and just there's a lot of ground that I plan on covering with Sean Hackett on today's show. All right, buddy, let's get it started. What you got in the markets?
Chip, USDA says 56% of the U.S. winter wheat crop had emerged as of October 27. That's 5 points behind the five-year average pace.
In the first crop condition ratings of the fall, USDA rated 38% of the crop in good to excellent condition, 39% fair, 23% poor to very poor. Conditions are the second lowest on record, Chip, behind only the crop from 2 years ago. Tightening supplies and crop uncertainty around the globe are limiting selling interest in wheat futures. December soft red winter wheat futures opened slightly higher and respected support at yesterday's low, and then rallied to post a high range close. December HRW wheat futures today 12¾ higher, 5.74¼. December SRW wheat up 11¾ cents to 5.70½. December spring wheat closed at 6.06½. That's up 11¼ cents, Chip.
Yeah, it's early. I know it's a fall crop condition rating that we've got on this winter wheat crop. There's plenty of time to improve conditions, but establishing that crop is so important, Dan, with the emergence behind the five-year average, and that, you know, the crop that has emerged being rated fairly low. I think that gave us some support for the higher trade in the wheat markets today.
Well, Chip, corn harvest reached 81% complete as of October 27. That's 17 points ahead of the five-year average. Enough of the corn crop has been harvested to suggest a slowdown in harvest hedge selling. December corn opened on session lows and on support at 410, then rallied to match resistance at yesterday's high before posting a high-range close. There was no daily export sales announcement for corn today, but trade sources indicate South Korea was shopping for optional origin supplies. That broke a string of 9 consecutive export sales announcements for corn. Spillover support from wheat futures helped corn work to the upside. December corn futures today 3 cents higher, 4.13¾. March corn up 2¼ cents to 4.27. July corn futures closed at 4.39. That's up 1¼ cents, Chip.
Yeah, a day of rest for the guys at the export sales reporting department. Yeah. Hopefully we put them back to work tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I was lonely this morning without those sales. I remember thinking that. Bean harvest as of October 27 estimated 89% complete, 11 points ahead of the five-year average. Improved soil moisture conditions in Brazil limited buying interest and are giving crop watchers encouragement to stick with lofty crop estimates for that country. Mm-hmm. Argentine growing conditions have also improved, and crop watchers expect Argentina to move more acres to soybeans this year. That's got bean meal under pressure. December bean meal posted a 6th consecutive lower close, bumping against support near the $300 level. January bean futures have fallen 39 cents from last Thursday's high and closed at the lowest level since August 16. January beans today 7 cents lower, 9.79. March beans down 4¾ to 9.93½. July beans closed at 10.22, down 3½ cents, Chip.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those acreage expectations coming up here in just a little bit with Sean Hackett.
Cotton harvest 52% complete. That's 6 points ahead of the five-year average. December cotton today 20 points higher, 70.56. On your livestock, boxed beef prices were lower this morning, but movement was good at 81 loads. Ideas that cash cattle might trade lower this week resulted in a downside reversal in December cattle near session lows on the close. Dece live cattle down $1.32½ to $187.95. November feeder futures $2.60 lower to $46.60. And on the snout side, Dece lean hog futures gapped higher in near session lows and closed near contract highs. December hogs today $2.20 higher, $82.82½. Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Yeah, hogs left that upside gap open on the chart on the close today. Brian Split, AgMarket.net. How you doing, Brian?
Oh, tremendous, Chip. What's happening?
Well, the setback in the cattle complex today, it's got me a little concerned. What's it telling you?
So there's a few nuances to this cattle that I want to talk about technically. Hopefully I can get to all of them. But number one is just essentially where we are big picture relative to some of these highs that we made. This would go back to our spring and summer highs, right? So the proximity to these highs, very close. Now, in December live cattle specifically, we have an ascending wedge, right? So there's an uptrend from the lows that were scored in September. Then you have an overhead kind of a channel line from mid-August to some of these highs we've been making recently. So we took out that uptrend, so we're kind of falling out of that wedge. Today was an outside day down for both live cattle and feeder cattle, meaning we made a new high above yesterday's highs, closed below yesterday's lows. But the really concerning thing to me is looking at a weekly continuous live cattle chart. We had some highs that were made back in March, and that was at 190.27. We have the highs made this week, and that was at 190.47. We have lows that were scored back in May and lows that were scored in September with the record highs that were posted in June. That is forming a very large potential head and shoulder top. And these highs this week would be potentially be your right shoulder. Now, what I'm looking for later into the week as this October contract expires, the low on October cattle last week was 186.70. So if December sees follow through into the weekend and we close below 186.70, we're also going to have a weekly reversal on the weekly continuous chart. So there's a lot of different things lined up right here that have me concerned about the health of this trend.
Yeah. Yeah. And when the, you know, working with some of the fundamental indicators like that box beef market that was lower today, ideas that cash might trade lower, man, the fundamentals and the technicals, when they hook up and start trading in the same direction, it can get dangerous in there.
Yeah. Right. And you forgot about the weights, Chip, the weights.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. The weights coming in as heavy as they are. Good stuff, man. Thank you. All right. That is Brian Split, AgMarket.net. Coming up next, Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors.
Welcome to the soothing sounds of Cropland Seed. It's the kind of sound you only get with broad access to high-performing genetics and traits, and years of data from extensive testing. Also, retailers can recommend what will work best in your fields. Take some stress out of your season. Talk to your local retail seed expert about Cropland Seed today.
Okay, antibodies, huddle up. We're a great team, but the flu is dominating. The good news is the human we're protecting just got his flu shots. That means all of us antibodies have strong new gear that will help us fight and defend against the flu. We must win so that our human can stay healthy and help protect the people he cares about most.
Let's work as a team to defend against the flu. Gear up with a flu shot to help protect yourself and others and reduce your risk of being sick or hospitalized with the flu. Learn more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine. Not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Retirement can be scary.
Life is better with American Family Insurance because our agents provide specialized local expertise to help you get the right coverage at the right price. We understand that dairy farming is at the heart of what you do, and we want to help protect what you've worked so hard for. Let's build the policy your dairy farm deserves.
Contact Paul Slusher, your American Family Insurance agent serving Durand and Chippewa Falls.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, SI, and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Building a new home or remodeling and need a new plumber? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need a perk test or septic system? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need sewer line cleaning or repair? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need a new water heater or repair? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. From basic plumbing to big projects, call Chris Bauer of Bauer Plumbing and Septic Service at 715-672-8224. That's 715-672-8224.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon here on AgriTalk. Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisor. Sean, how are you?
I'm good, Chip. Always, always, always love being on your show. Thanks for having me back and look forward to a spirited discussion today.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for making time. Okay, A lot of ground that I want to cover. There's one. There's several items that I want to get to. But let's go ahead and start with the current condition of the markets, and I'm just going to say the markets. You can broaden that out or narrow it up as much as you want so the condition of the markets as we get to within a week of the presidential elections. What's running through your minds?
The commodity markets are terribly concerned about a Trump presidency bringing back escalating tariff wars, reduction of trade, reduction in demand for U.S. commodities. And that seems to be, we've been seeing a lot of weakness in energies, even in grain markets. And it's just tremendous concern that a second Trump administration is going to create a havoc in that regard. And so the markets are just very uneasy. Now, it could be sell the rumor, buy the news. Vice President Harris wins and it's a big rope-a-dope. But right now, we can't seem to get rid of that boogeyman on our backs is how that's going to play out, because it was very unpleasant the last time Trump came into pre-presidency. We had very difficult commodity markets when he was doing his tariff escalation. I think that will continue to be the case until we know what happens here.
Hey, can I sneak in here for just a second? A thought on that. I know that the ag community, farmers and folks like us, in our orbit, are very aware of the whole tariff situation, and it's a big issue. What about the average non-farm Trump supporter? Are they concerned about the tariffs as well? Is this an issue for non-aggie types in that orbit?
Well, I think the appeal to President Trump is that those that have lost their jobs to free trade, especially those, let's say those auto workers in Michigan, as just an example, they love the idea of creating a fairer playing field, better trade, fairer trade, bringing jobs back home. They see this as a long trend that needs to be reversed. And I don't think that they're worrying too much about what it means to the farm economy. And I can understand that because obviously they're looking out for themselves, but I don't think that they're looking at it the same way.
Okay. Interesting. Well, and if I was just a consumer, I'd be looking at what's happening in the energy markets and saying, hey, well, and even from a farmer's perspective, Sean, they can look at what's happening in the energies and say that there's some good things that are happening there. The problem is that it is spread across the commodity world, and it's not just energies that might be under pressure, but also the grains. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely. And yes, lower energy prices for the consumer is good news. Lower food prices, to the extent that lower grains leads to a lower price at the food store, is good news for the consumer. But it's not great news for the U.S. farm economy. It's not great news for the ability to produce and make investments into the future. It's not good news, if you're trying to get away from relying on government payments for your sustenance. This is going back to where we were. So like everything else, there's always winners and losers in every situation. But it just seems that in this particular situation, it's the ag economy, it's the commodity economy that's taking on the chin for the betterment of others. That seems to be what it looks like to me.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. What about the interest rate markets? When you see what's happening there with the long-term rates, well, and even the short-term rates climbing since the Federal Reserve decided to lower the Fed funds rate, we've got interest rates that are moving to the upside now. Has that got something to do with the election outlook?
Well, I really believe that whoever becomes the president, I don't see policies on either side that are addressing our escalating out of control debt creation on a government level. You can argue that one spends money one way and one spends money another way, but I don't see either side saying they're going to slow down this debt creation at all. And the problem is our debt expense, our debt costs are becoming larger, the second largest expense item on the budget, greater than defense spending, and it continues to grow. Something has to happen. We can't continue to do this. And the thought process is that interest rates are the first market that are starting to sniff out that that the only way you're going to put this genie back in the bottle is you have to force the politicians to do something they don't want to do, which is find a way to spend less and bring more money in, which is that something we haven't done in a very, very long time.
Very long time. I mean, geez. Yeah, what 40 years, right?
40 years. Absolutely. It's at least 40 years. Yeah. And so politicians typically don't take action to stop spending unless the markets force it. That either comes into the form of higher interest rates or a dramatically weaker U.S. dollar that creates uncomfortable inflation. Both are the measures that historically have always forced politicians to move the other way. And the markets are going to have to do that because either side doesn't seem to me to be serious about doing anything about our government debt.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You know, you mentioned the dollar. I'll admit, you know, 6 months ago, well, even longer ago than that, go back to the start of the year, when I was thinking about, okay, the impacts of an election year on the markets, my thought at that time was that the dollar would move away from par, that it would either be well above par or below par, one of the two, but not hanging within 5%. And here we are, still hanging within 5% of par. That surprises me, Sean.
Well, I think it's a situation where because everyone else is in a debt bomb like we are.
Yeah.
Look at gold. Look at gold as just an example. It's rising in all currencies. It's rising in the U.S. dollar by a lot, but it's rising in other currencies even more. So it's not like the U.S. dollar is strong. It's just as strong relative to the other currencies, meaning all currencies are actually devaluing because of having to manage all of this debt and the money printing that's needed to create it. So I think it's a relative issue. And that's why it looks like the dollar is strong, but it really isn't strong, and or else gold wouldn't be heading to all-time highs on a weekly basis.
Yep. Okay. I got you. Okay. What's the role of wheat in this market right now? I mean, the move that we saw today, did that start something new or more choppy trade ahead?
The wheat market always, in my opinion, always is the leader for grains, out and in. When I look at what happened in Russia with the increase of the export tax up 14%, it's the first time they're taking action to reduce blistering exports in at least a couple of years. We look at the worst planting, winter wheat planting season they've had in Russia, Ukraine since 2010-11. The incredibly poor condition and stands going into dormancy, less planted acres. The way we are doing our base case, the best case scenario that we can see, given that, is that their crop production in next summer will be no better than the crop production they just had, which was 15% down from last year and 22% down from the record production they had 2 years ago. What happens in Russia will not stay in Russia. They're the dominant price setter for wheat. I think this is a big, big shift, and the wheat market turning up, I think, is the beginning of something much larger trend for wheat, which tends to drive especially corn higher over the longer term.
Okay. All right. Then our timing to get you on here was very was very good. Timing. What's the timing on the move? How do you see this wheat market kind of trading between now and the end of the year?
Well, I think we had remember when you announced that you're putting an export tax on, what happens? All the cash sellers try to flood the market in advance. And so we've been dealing with some indigestion ever since this was announced about a week and a half ago. I believe now we're going to start getting past that indigestion, and we're going to start seeing less exports coming out of Russia and bigger exports coming out of the United States. And that means that we're going to start to see the Russian cash price rise and allow other markets like the U.S. wheat price market to move higher. So I think it's going to be, I wouldn't say it's going to be like a, you know, gapping up kind of a move, but I think it's going to be a steady uptrending move, trading the first major fundamental shift in Russia, in, like I said, at least a couple of years.
Okay. All right. And it may not pull corn, you know, along every step of the way, but it's at least going to take weight off the corn and the bean market, I would think.
Especially the corn market. Absolutely. I think that for especially the corn market, you're going to get a window, you know, to get yourself an ability to move higher until we can get into second crop corn in Brazil and get a reason for them to move higher.
Okay. Very good. Man, oh, man, that went by in a hurry. We are in the middle of a conversation with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Coming up next, we are going to take a look at what is happening in South America with the crop potential right now, the weather patterns, and what does the dry fall set us up for here in the U.S.? We're talking with Sean Hackett here on AgriTalk.
Spring floods, fall floods.
There's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Extreme weather cost American farmers over $21 billion in 2023.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops.
These USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America.
Conservation practices that help farmers weather these storms are at risk in the Farm Bill.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Climate smart farming is just smart farming. Learn more at investinourland.org. Paid for by Invest in Our Land.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes, where December HRW wheat futures were 12 and 3/4 cents higher at 574 and a quarter. December SRW wheat up 11 and 3/4 cents to 570 and a half. December corn futures were 3 cents higher today, 413 and 3/4 at the close. March corn up 2 and 1/4 cents to 427. January soybean futures 7 cents lower at 979. March beans down 4 3/4 to 993 and 1/2. December cotton today was 20 points higher at 70.56. On your livestock's December fat cattle off 132 and a half, 187.95. November feeders 260 lower, 246.60. December lean hog futures $2.20 higher at 82.82 and 1/2. Get more. Visit tryprofarmer.com.
What's the farmers? Now's the time to apply lime to your fields from Lamb Ag Services. Lime reduces soil acidity, improves soil structure, promotes root growth, and improves crop yields. Lamb Ag Services sources lime from area quarries and offers straight or variable rates to match your field's soil needs. When you call Lamb Ag Services, there's no middleman. They answer the phone and do the work on your farm. Call Brian at 715-279-0267 for your lime application needs with Lamb Ag Services.
The Wisconsin Corn Growers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit WICorn.org and become a member today.
Hey, this is Matthew with Bluff Country Feed and Seed. When you start to think about planting roots and building your foundation for spring, fertilizing crops is like putting money in the bank. You put dollars or pounds in, but are your investments paying you interest? Or does it seem like you only get out what you put in, or even less? Soil health and living biology are the ticket to unlocking the next bushel. Farming for Biology takes a customized approach. Let my team help create your soil health strategy. Check out our website or give us a call today.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Summer is here today. High temperatures will attempt to shatter records as we soar to 80 degrees. Winds will be whipping out of the southwest, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, keeping us warm overnight too. More records are on the line by tomorrow morning as lows only fall to the mid-60s. For fall and winter getaways plus holiday fun, check out Alexandria, Minnesota. ExploreAlex.com. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Ever since I met your girl. Welcome back. We are in the middle of a conversation with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Okay, Sean, let's talk weather. What is the major influence on some of the global weather trends that we're seeing right now. What are you watching?
I mean, I think the number one thing to watch is northern Brazil, which is the key soybean area. I think 60% to 5% of all soybeans are grown in the north. They've had an historic dry start to the season, extreme delayed planting. They're getting some rains now. It's made the soybean market take weather premium out. But we strongly believe that the weather models that are projecting rain out into November are incorrect, and that we think we're going to go back to a much drier pattern again as those pods start to get set from mid-late November into late December. One of the reasons we feel that way is global angular momentum, which we've talked about on your show before, is very important when you don't really have a strong La Nina effect. Right now, it's been positive, a positive global angular momentum, meaning strong global stratospheric winds tend to produce better moisture in central northern Brazil. That global angular momentum is expected to really fall back into negative territory starting the first week of November into the latter part of November. This suggests to us that the weather models will turn back to being much drier at this secondary critical stage for soybean development. So we feel that the market's going to have to put weather premium back on, and we're just looking for when those weather models start to show that. Probably sometime later next week is when they'll pick it up.
Okay. All right. Sometime next week. Now, it's going to sound like we're jumping around a little bit here, everyone, but there are some different indicators that I want to get to with Sean. Dude, I've seen the Northern Lights a couple of times this year. They've been stronger than normal. Every time I see them, I think of you, and I wonder what you think about it as far as the influence of that magnetic pull on the weather.
Well, we're at the solar cycle 25 peak of the 11-year solar cycle. So anytime you're at the peak, Chip, you always get maximum geomagnetic storms is what they call them. And that's where you get those northern lights. And so we're at peak activity in the 11-year solar cycle. That also tends to be at a time where we can bring in a more stagnant, warmer, a drier pattern for many areas of the North America, Northern Hemisphere, including the United States, if we have other corroborating factors. So having a peak of the 11-year solar cycle and large geomagnetic releases from the sun does tend to increase the risks of a dry weather pattern. One of the reasons why we've had such an incredibly historically dry September and October so far up to this point.
Okay. ENSO status. How much of an influence is the ENSO having on our weather patterns right now?
Well, we're in what's called a neutral negative to borderline La Nina state. That's where we're at. That means it's not a major factor in the weather trends. And I don't think we're going to get anything more than that, Chip. I think we're at the maximum of the negative ENSO phase, and that we're pretty much looking at more of a neutral phase going all the way out, not only to next growing season, but the season after, meaning I don't think we're going to have a strong influence from El Nino or La Nina. It's going to be more of a neutral, probably neutral siding to a negative side of the ENSO. And that is very different to the weather patterns we've had the last 2 years, when we've had thrashing El Nino flipping to La Nina and La Nina flipping to El Nino. This is going to be a steady state ENSO. Also increases the chances for stagnant weather patterns to develop during next growing season. And that's something we saw in 2012. That's something we saw in 1934, 1936, 1955. Those were years that we didn't have a strong ENSO effect. It was more of a neutral effect. And I think that is something that will help foster greater chances for a warmer, drier pattern than what we saw this past season.
Okay. Stagnant. Stagnant weather patterns. You've used that definition a couple of times already. It seems like that's I don't recall you using that as a descriptor in the past. Why?
When you have a steady state ENSO, that means the atmosphere isn't changing much, right? I mean, it's sitting there in this state, and it has to align with other factors, global angular momentum, quasi-biennial oscillation, PDO. There's a lot of factors that we've talked about on your show before that that set up the upper airflow pattern. But what I mean by that is when you get it set, when that upper airflow pattern gets set, it's not going to change much. And that's why Russia and Ukraine had this historic drought, because it got set up and it just doesn't change. You have to have that if you're going to have a major drought in the U.S. You can't have a variable upper airflow pattern like we've seen in the last year. It has to be, and it has to have ability to kind of set itself and not change much. And that's what I think we're setting up for next growing season.
Okay. Drier, we're going to get to that. Drier, warmer, stagnant here in the Midwest. We've seen improved conditions in northern Brazil, but you expect it to dry out again in November. Here in the Midwest, we've got some rains coming. I mean, I haven't seen 100% chance of rain on the forecast for 3 months, Sean, and we got it for tomorrow. What is the pattern that we've got here in the Midwest tell you about the weather going forward?
Well, I always say that, every major, if you look at the top 10 droughts in the United States going back to 1885, every single one of them had a dry September and October, but not every dry September and October had a historic drought the following year.
Yes.
Rains are right. So, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be. It means that that's what you typically see is, and this wasn't dry. This was like 50-year dryness in September and October. Yes, some rains are coming in the next couple of weeks. It will help. It will certainly, you know, help the winter wheat crop, you know, get established and that sort of thing. But nothing that I see beyond the next few weeks says that this is a big change in the pattern. I think we're going to come out of dormancy in March and April. We're going to be looking at all those subsoil moisture patterns, maps, and they're going to show extreme dryness in the middle of the country. I don't think this next couple of weeks of rains, although hugely helpful for winter wheat establishment, is going to change that prognosis much. You're not going to reverse September and October being this dry with a couple of weeks of rain.
Okay. Your outlook for what does all this tell you about next year's growing season?
Well, we had a kind of a perfect growing season this year, at least in the month of July. It says next year that we're going to have substantially greater problems, greater worries. And I did an analysis, Chip, going back to the last Weisberg cycle in the 1930s, and I looked at Palmer Drought Severity Index of Brazil and of Russia-Ukraine, and both of those regions had major droughts the year before the big drought year that occurred in the United States, meaning that the upper airflow pattern tends to set up in these other regions, telling you that we're, you know, that the U.S. is getting set up to follow suit. Doesn't mean it has to be, you know, the one in 100 year. It just means that we're, that the upper airflow pattern is set up for a much more problematic growing season next year. And as we get closer to the spring, we can, you know, kind of slice and dice more closely what kind of a drought pattern we're going to have. But I don't believe we're going to have the kind of situation where record yields can be had next season.
It's not very often. It's not very often that we can do this, but there's going to be lots of warning if we're going to have a dry growing season. That's what I keep hearing. And, you know, because South America, Brazil is going to show us that we're going to have a drought. Russia is going to show us that we're going to have a drought. If it's going to happen, we're going to know in advance, don't you think?
Absolutely. We always put out in our reports to our subscribers signposts to watch, check boxes to go, you know, the first thing we need to see is a dry September, October checkbox, you know, and we go down this list and every time we can put a checkbox in there, it increases confidence about what we expect to see for the next, for the next growing season. And so far, Brazil drought checkbox, Russia, Ukraine drought checkbox. Drought in September, October in the U.S. Midwest, checkbox. Steady state ENSO, neutral negative, checkbox. We know we've never had a major drought in the U.S. if it's an El Nino. So far, the checkboxes keep raising the level of concern for next year.
Okay. What's that doing to your marketing? How aggressive are you on the 24 crop?
Look, you know, we're in a situation where farmers are you know, really squeezed here. Many farmers, you know, haven't sold a lot. So, you know, the first thing, my first priority is to make sure they keep farming, right? If they can't keep farming, then there's not much good to my advice to them. So the first thing I'm saying everyone to do is get yourself situated, make sales, look for opportunities, get yourself in a comfortable position, but don't sell one bushel more than you absolutely have to remain a farmer. That's my advice. And I really believe this is not a time to go aggressively selling beyond what you need to keep yourself funded going forward. That's the key.
Sean, I don't know if I've ever heard marketing described quite like that. Don't sell one bushel more than what you have to keep farming. That's says it very, very clearly on how you think these markets are going to play out in going forward.
It's the same recommendation we made back in 2020, Chip. We had this exact same recommendation back then.
Yep.
And it turned out to be a great cash marketing recommendation. We believe this is the right recommendation now.
Okay, here's the deal, man. We need to stay in touch. We need to get you back on a fairly regular basis and just do an update and see how many boxes are getting checked in all of this, okay?
Sounds great, Chip. Thank you so much, and God bless you and your wonderful show.
Thank you, sir. Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Wow.
Want to get
Hi, I'm Treg Prenshinsky. I'm a husband, father, farmer, and contractor. Growing up in western Wisconsin, I was taught to be honest, work hard, and stay humble. I've taken these values with me to Madison, where I've rolled up my sleeves and worked to make life more affordable for Wisconsin families and to make sure our communities remain a great place to raise a family. I ask for your vote November 5th so I can finish the job that I started. Paid for by T.E. Prenshinsky for Assembly.
It's a couple hours before the football game. The only question is, what are you bringing to the tailgate? Classic beef cheeseburgers? Steak fajitas? Or maybe that beefy seven-layer dip everyone raves about. No matter what you bring, if it's beef, you're going to be the MVP. Together, we bring more. Rev up your crowd at beefitswhatsfordinner.com. Funded by Beef Farmers and Ranchers.
Tammy Baldwin's record is radical and dangerous. Baldwin voted to let boys compete in girls' sports, and she co-sponsored a bill to force women to share locker rooms with biological men. Tammy Baldwin also has a secret. She spends her time in D.C. and New York, where her girlfriend is a high-end Wall Street advisor, but Baldwin refuses to disclose their assets. The press says her actions raise serious ethical questions. While Tammy looks out for herself, she's left our southern border wide open, leading to deadly fentanyl and criminals across Wisconsin. And under Baldwin, inflation has soared, costing us thousands of dollars per year. 25 years of career politician Tammy Baldwin is enough. She's too liberal and too extreme. The better choice is Eric Hovde, endorsed by President Trump. Eric Hovde for U.S. Senate. Fix Washington PAC paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. FixWashingtonPAC.org.
Nitrogen stabilizer. You might be falling for a losing strategy. Low-rate products promise great results, but may lack the potency of higher active ingredient concentrations. So great isn't always what you get. Instead of putting your yield at risk, put your trust in Anvil Nitrogen Stabilizer and Super U Premium Fertilizer from Koch Agronomic Services. Both offer higher active ingredient concentrations imitator brands can't match. See the difference at defendyourn.com.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today.
brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report, and more than a host, I'm a journalist, a wife, and a mom of two, raising a family in the heart of rural America. I understand the issues facing agriculture today because I live it every day. I see firsthand how farming and ranching isn't just a job, it's a way of life. Covering America's most important industry is what we do, and it's why U.S. Farm Report has been on the air for nearly 50 years. I invite you to join us every weekend for U.S. Farm Report, a timely, trusted tradition.
The Scoop Podcast is where we talk about tight supply chains, emerging agronomic challenges, technology tools delivering ROI. I'm Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop and host of The Scoop Podcast. Join me as I interview leaders from across the ag retail sector. Farmers are working hard for every bushel, and their trusted advisors are by their side. Find The Scoop Podcast wherever you find podcasts so you are up to date on everything ag retail.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine, not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here along with Chip Flory on the radio or your preferred digital device. Chip?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. I am here.
Good talk.
What a conversation.
Great talk. With Sean Hackett there. couple of high points. Don't sell one more bushel than you have to keep farming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yeah. As far as I can tell. You know, and that was based on the conversation that we had in the second segment with Sean, because you go back to that conversation that we had in the first segment, talking about how commodities might be factoring in a Trump win and the increased likelihood of a tariff-driven trade policy platform going forward. His words, not mine. That would suggest that these markets are going to stay under pressure. And if nothing else, if we're going to get into, if farmers are going to be the point of the spear again on a trade war around, you know, around the globe, maybe you should get something sold with the idea that, okay, I understand that the last time the trade war happened with Trump and Trump put the tariffs in place, that farmers were quote unquote compensated with the MFP payments, market facilitation program payments. I would think that there would be some sort of a program like that again, although I don't know. And
I would wonder.
The only thing that I was going to say, add there,
go on,
is that. All I know is that former President Trump has mentioned the tariffs several times. He hasn't made mention that compensation will be given to those affected the most by that trade war. Not to say that he won't at some point. He just hasn't. Not that I'm aware of.
Where would we get the money for another couple rounds of MFP payments, dude?
You heard Hackett.
That was a terrifying observation.
Neither party has shown an interest in cutting spending.
Yeah.
We're not picking on one party we spend too much. I think we pick on both parties equally.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's pick on the weather a little bit.
He's not. Now, I don't know. Is he a weatherman or is he just sort of a weather watcher who's been doing it for a really, really long time?
He's a student. He understands that weather is more than, you know, well, it's climate change.
Right.
Okay. He understands that it is more than that. He understands that the solar cycles have an impact. He understands that weather does cycle. Okay. I'm in agreement with him on a lot of these issues, and you guys know it. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. If you're brand new to AgriTalk, hi, and thank you for listening. Glad that you've decided to join us. To everybody else out there that has been listening for quite some time, they know that I have talked about this 89-year drought cycle for quite some time, and that it is set to peak in 2025. And then you throw on top of that the Gleisberg cycle that Sean mentioned, which has more to do with the solar activity, the magnetic activity, and so on. But it is not unrelated. It is not unrelated to drought in the Midwest. So there is a lot that is stacking up in favor of drier, a less than ideal growing season in the year ahead. And Sean checked the boxes for you. I don't have to go over it again. Sean checked the boxes for you. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Here's the thing, Davis. What if it is dry next year? Let's talk about that. What if it is dry?
Okay.
A couple of things. Number one, how did a guy back in the 1980s tell me that and pinpoint it in that 2025 would be the peak of this volatile weather period?
Cycles, baby. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Number two, what does it do to the markets? Well, soybeans have got a supply side cushion that we are going to have to deal with. That makes that market less vulnerable than wheat, in particular, corn secondary to a less than ideal growing season. So wheat, if it does respond, it's going to respond because of some conditions outside of the U.S. first, Russia, Ukraine, Australia, Europe. Then it starts to impact the U.S. Well, look at that. We've got the second worst initial crop condition ratings that we've ever had this year because of the dry conditions in the southern plains. All right, now throw on top of that the drought in South America that has happened. There's some relief in place, but what if it does come back? The volatility of the weather is going to ultimately be reflected in the futures markets. I just don't think there's any question about that. There's not enough of a supply side cushion to override the risks, the supply side risks that would come with that kind of a drought. Okay? That's the bottom line. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, November 4th through the 8th. Above normal temperatures expected over the Corn Belt. That includes eastern Nebraska, eastern South Dakota, eastern North Dakota, and the eastern half of Kansas. Above normal precipitation expected across the entire Corn Belt, 8 to 14 days, November 6th through the 12th. Above normal temperatures, above normal precipitation in the southern half of the Corn Belt, near normal in the northern half of the belt. Thank you so much for listening today. Come back tomorrow morning. Emily Spohr, CEO of Growth Energy, here on AgriTalk.
I'm Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. Join me each weekend as we explore the news and issues that matter the most to agriculture. We know this past year has been challenging in many ways, but as agriculture continues to adapt, we are right there with you. From markets to weather, each weekend we take a deep dive into what matters most. Join me each weekend for U.S. Farm Report, timely, trusted tradition.
Want to get smarter and have some fun while you're at it? Introducing Unscripted and Grow Getters, two of agriculture's most entertaining and engaging podcasts. Hosted by U.S. Farm Report's Tyne Morgan and Ag Day's Clinton Griffiths, Unscripted is your chance to meet the personalities behind the personalities. And with heart and humor, Grow Getters with host Davis Michelson explores ag's most innovative side hustles. You can find Unscripted and Grow Getters on the Farm Journal YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
Liberal politician Kamala Harris wants to take your guns. She says it herself.
We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program.
Mandatory buybacks? That's Washington speak for taking away your guns. More from Kamala.
Just because you legally possess a gun in your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home